When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk Podcast. I'm joined by your favorite beat reporter, Chris Fedor. What's going on, Chris?
Ethan, how's it going, man?
It's going. I mean, we just got back from a home game. Woo! I think we should just celebrate the fact Cavs are not on the road any longer. One, because Chris has to endure those road trips. And two, because the Cavs needed some home cooking. Chris, they were able to pull out a victory against the Memphis Grizzlies. And let's preface this with the fact that the Memphis Grizzlies had 12 players out tonight. They had 8 total players available. This was supposed to be a cakewalk to begin with because the Cavs are in playoff contention and the Memphis Grizzlies are already eliminated from the playoffs. But this game was up in the air up until after halftime. The Memphis Grizzlies went into halftime with a 3-point lead and then the Cavs just turned it around. But Chris, before we go into how they changed the tide of the game, we have to do what we have to do. Looking back at how ugly the first half was for the Cavs, what went wrong, Chris?
Oh, the offense was terrible. Are you kidding me? They shot 36% from the field. They had an offensive rating of like 101. And aside from Donovan Mitchell, nobody could really get it going on the offensive end of the floor. Darius wasn't really setting up his teammates. When he was setting up his teammates, they weren't knocking down the shots. Darius was struggling with his own shot. Jared Allen was missing chippies around the basket. It seemed like he was trying to initiate contact and get a whistle rather than playing through the contact and finishing through contact. Evan Mobley kept fumbling the ball away. There was really no lift from the Cavs bench in the first half either. So to me, when things go wrong for this team, it is primarily an offensive issue. It doesn't mean every single game it's going to be offense, but for a majority of it, it's going to be an offensive issue. And they weren't good enough offensively in the first half against the Grizzlies. And Memphis certainly took advantage of that. I also do think there was a little bit of a hangover effect with the Cavs coming back from a 5-game road trip, playing against a team that had 12 players listed on the injury report and only 8 guys in uniform. There was probably a little natural letdown at the beginning of the game. But the Cavs showed just how good they can be, especially against lesser competition, in the second half. It was a very, very good all-around second half, complete performance for the team in the second half. And they deserve a lot of credit for figuring out the things that went wrong in the first half, making the necessary corrections, and coming away with a pretty decisive victory. After the midway point of the third quarter, it was pretty much in hand for the Cavs.
So, Chris, before we get into the good things that the Cavs were able to do today, I think we have to do justice by talking about what went wrong. And obviously, the offense, as you mentioned, was bad, but the turnovers, my goodness, it just felt like the teams were going back and forth, competing to figure out who could have the worst turnover in the game. They were simply handing the ball over to each other, not taking care of any possession. And for a team like the Memphis Grizzlies, who were not playing many rotation players, maybe one or two, but the Cavs had their starting five. The Cavs had the guys that they are going to use in the playoffs. J.B. Bickerstaff limited until the last minute and a half, 2 minutes of the game, his lineup to 8 guys as well. So the discrepancy between the B team, maybe even C team of the Memphis Grizzlies and the A squad of the Cavaliers, I feel like the Cavs cannot fail to dim down or water down their performance based on the opponent that they're playing. It has to be, this is who we are, this is how we're going to play, and we have to cherish each possession as if it might be a change in the game. And today, in the first half, that's what it was. And the Cavaliers also had a lot of different highlight plays come against them in Memphis. This was around the entire game, not just the first half. We saw guys getting dropped. We saw guys getting dunked on. And obviously, the Cavs retaliated and had some of those of their own. But we understand how big a highlight play like that can change the momentum for a team, Chris. And the Grizzlies, one that should not have even been in this game from the beginning, were feeding off of that. There's a guy that I want to mention for the Grizzlies. I don't know if a lot of people know him.
Jake LaRavia.
Jake was 6 for 6 in the first half from three-point range. And this guy is not somebody that the Cavs are used to facing because the Grizzlies rarely play him anyway. He's 6'7", 235 pounds, and he finished the game just 3 rebounds shy of what Jared Allen had and only 5 rebounds shy of what Evan Mobley had, both 7-footers. So there's obviously room to grow for the Cavs, but I think I've talked a little bit too much about what they've done negatively. Chris, did you have anything you wanted to add on that front before we get into the good of what we saw from the Cavs today?
No, because I don't think you have to be overreactionary based on a bad half of basketball when it was largely an offensive issue for this team. Yeah, you talked about LaRavia hitting all of those threes, and you talked about Memphis and some of their highlight reel moments, whatever. Those things happen throughout the course of a game. The Cavs in the first half tonight against Memphis had a defensive rating of 108.5. That's the equivalent of the second best defense in the entire NBA. That's fine. That's fine. Offensively, 102.1. You can't continue to have those lulls offensively if you're a team like the Cavs, because not every night is going to be a game against the Memphis Grizzlies. Not every night is going to be a game coming up Sunday against the Charlotte Hornets where you can overcome that long stretch of bad, non-productive offense and still have enough time to turn it around. You know what I mean? The Cavs have to find a little bit more consistency on a possession-to-possession basis, a quarter-to-quarter basis, a half-to-half basis, a game-to-game basis on the offensive end of the floor. And once they start finding that, then I think you'll see them play with a little bit more confidence. I think you'll see them play with a little bit more swagger. I think you'll see them feel better about where they are going into the postseason. But this is a group, Ethan, that understands the primary reason for all the other things that everybody wanted to talk about in that series against the Knicks last April. The primary reason why it was a non-competitive series is because the Cavs had the worst offense in the entire playoffs.
Yeah, Chris, and you mentioned confidence, and I want to get into that a little bit because Darius Garland is somebody that I've noticed that he levels up his play to guys that are playing at a higher level, or he plays at a higher level when he's competing against guys he knows. And I talked to him after the game a little bit about talking smack with guys that he knows or talking smack just in general. And even though he said that he doesn't necessarily change his game against the players that he knows, he definitely knows that there is more freedom to talk to them. I think subconsciously, his play elevates because he wants to compete against his friends and want to be able to have that ability to talk smack even in the offseason after the games are over. And I think that's another thing when it comes to confidence. Having bragging rights. Having something to talk about. We've seen George Niang, he hit 1 3-pointer and ran back and screaming boom and doing his celebrations and talking to the crowd. And that's who he is. And that's who he always is going to be. The conversations that I had with Darius and George after the game, they were talking about how they used to talk trash to each other when they played against each other. And now they're on the same team and now they got to find somebody else to talk to or talk about. And it's really funny just to see the dynamic of Darius Garland, someone who plays with joy, who plays with a competitive spirit, and when he has both of those at an all-time high, his game elevates to a new level. What do you think about that, Chris?
Well, who are you alluding to that he knew on the Grizzlies? Aside from Lamar Stevens, there's no way Darius knew anybody.
No, so he knew Lamar Stevens.
Obviously, he played with him. But it's not like he knows Gigi Jackson. It's not like he has a relationship with Scottie Pippen Jr. Look at these guys that were playing for the Memphis Grizzlies. They were all with the Memphis Hustle earlier this year.
Right, but I'm saying, so Darius did a little showmanship after a driving layup with Lamar Stevens, who he actually like pushed the ball into Lamar Stevens' chest in the first quarter. And then even though he didn't know Gigi Jackson, they were both jarring back and forth with each other. And it was a friendly fire after Gigi Jackson had got a bucket on Darius, and then Darius hit a sidestep three on Gigi, and they were talking on the way back down the court about, oh yeah, we got each other, yada, yada, yada. That's good competitive basketball. And that was at the end of the third quarter. And Darius hit another three in the fourth quarter and then tallied 5 assists in the fourth quarter, which was more assists than he had in the entire game. So I think that that could have had something to do with lighting a fire under Darius and just wanting him to play at a different speed, at a different level.
Well, Darius is at his best when he plays with joy, when he has fun, when he's not feeling the pressure. And it's been hard for him throughout the course of this year, Ethan, to play with that same kind of joy because he's been dealing with things off the court. He's been battling injuries. He's been frustrated with his own play. He's had some personal things that he's been dealing with. The loss of his grandma was something that has been weighing heavily on him, and it affected him at the time. It's still affecting him. It's still affecting other members of his family. So I think what Darius brings to this team, what he can bring to this team behind the scenes, is a playfulness, a joyfulness, an ability to keep the mood a little bit light. And sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes you need that in a grind of an 82-game season. Because by the end of the year, you get sick of the dude next to you, right? You get sick of the media members that are around you constantly. You probably get sick of JB Bickerstaff and the other members of the coaching staff. Their voice wears thin on you. You know what I mean? So sometimes you just have to find a way to break from the monotony of the day-to-day and the monotony of an 82-game schedule. And Darius is somebody who likes to have fun. Darius is somebody who likes to be playful. Darius is somebody who likes to have a smile on his face as well. I just think at this stage of his career, Ethan, he's got to find a balance of those things and the other things of taking possessions a little bit more seriously, right? Understanding the magnitude, understanding time, score, situation, all of that kind of stuff. And provided that he balances those two things the right way, then I think you can have an effective, impactful Darius Garland. And it's a lot easier to talk a lot of smack and have a lot of fun when, you know, you're beating up on a wounded Memphis Grizzlies team in the second half. So it's just the kind of play, it's the kind of style that the Cavs need to carry over into Friday night against Indiana, which is a big game with big stakes.
Yeah, and before we move on to that, because obviously that's the next topic, is what's going on in the league and all of those things, I just wanted to reference Darius Garland's performance against the Philadelphia 76ers when he was tasked with guarding Tyrese Maxey the last time they were in Cleveland. And that was a matchup that we weren't expecting Darius Garland to take that challenge on defensively, because he knew that he wasn't playing up to his caliber defensively. But knowing that it was Maxey, knowing that it was a guy that he could potentially see in the playoffs, he stepped his game up. And that competitive spirit is something that we're going to have to see from Darius more often. Obviously, he had back-to-back games with 5 steals. And today, he was also getting active on the defensive end as well. He had a block, which is something we don't see from a guy of his stature. But even though he was moving around defensively and getting those things, it's important for Darius to try and up his game and just have as much fun and have as much competitive spirit on both ends of the floor. But Chris, like you mentioned just a second ago, we want to talk about how important this game is on Friday against the Indiana Pacers. We know that the Boston Celtics have their spot locked up. Milwaukee has sealed a spot in the playoffs. And after tonight, the New York Knicks have also sealed a spot in the playoffs. Now it's 4, 5, 6 seeds bouncing around and trying to figure out if they're going to go all the way down to the play-in or where they're going to end up in seeding and how they're going to match up in the playoffs. Right now, Cleveland is 4 and Orlando is 5. After Orlando lost tonight to the Milwaukee Bucks, who are without Giannis Antetokounmpo, they dropped down to the 5 seed, and the Cavs are now a game ahead of the Magic in the 4th seed. They're actually only a half game behind the Knicks in the 3rd seed. But the Pacers, who the Cavs play on Friday, are in the 6th seed and only a game behind the Cavs. So it's a huge game for a team that they could potentially match up with in the playoffs and just a measuring stick to see where this Cavs team is against another playoff contending team dealing with all the injuries that they are and reacclimating Donovan Mitchell and seeing where he is at this time. Chris, the importance of this game cannot be overstated. What are your thoughts going into Friday's matchup?
Yeah, it goes way beyond that to me, honestly. If the Cavs win against the Pacers, they get the tiebreaker over the Pacers. They lock themselves into a top 5 spot in the Eastern Conference. And given the way that things are shaking out currently, that could allow them to avoid the New York Knicks in a first round series. And it's also a situation where it could allow the Cavs to potentially run the table because the Sunday game to cap off the regular season is against Charlotte. Charlotte stinks. They got 20 wins on the season. So it's huge for the Cavs to play against the Pacers. I do think there is some level of, you know, we do want to measure where we are against that caliber opponent. We do want to potentially send a message to a team that we could see in the first round. But for them, if they get the tiebreaker over Indiana, that's a big deal. If they lock themselves into the top 5, that's a big deal. And if they are in a situation where they have those advantages going into the finale against Charlotte, that's a big deal too, because the final game of the year for the Knicks is against Chicago. Chicago's a better opponent than Charlotte. They're obviously not some team that should be able to beat the Knicks, but it could be a more competitive matchup, certainly more competitive than Charlotte, and that could lead, emphasis on could lead the Knicks to slip up a little bit. The Magic still have to play Philly and Milwaukee to finish out the season. It feels like tonight against Memphis started to give the Cavs a little bit of an opportunity to exhale after what was a pretty bad month to start and what was a pretty bad stretch and what had them kind of going down the standings. And then if they beat Indiana, then all of a sudden they're more in the Eastern Conference driver's seat in some of the more doomsday type scenarios of dangerous seeding situations or losing out on home court advantage. It feels like those kind of go to the back burner and aren't as possible as what they felt like they would have been coming off the road trip that where they just went 1-4 and they dropped to the 5th seed in the Eastern Conference. So I do think the game against Indiana is awfully significant as an April matchup can be.
Yeah, Kristen, I mean, confidence is a big thing. We've talked about that a whole lot. And confidence going up against a playoff competitor and knowing that this team is someone that they could play in the postseason, it weighs on you. I think the Cavs understand how much gravity this game holds, not even in the standings, but for how their mindset is going to be set going into the playoffs. And earlier today, Basketball Reference said that there's a high probability of the Cavs playing the Magic in the first round. So we understand that they have a high-paced offense. We know that they have a really stellar defense, especially as of late. The Indiana Pacers are a run-and-gun team who like to get out in transition. So this can not only help them prepare for a matchup against the Pacers, but also an even higher probability game against the Magic. And I want to kind of get into that scenario a little bit more too, because obviously we just saw that the Magic lost to the Bucks today. They have the 76ers and then the Bucks again. That last last game being in Orlando. I think the Cavs can learn a lot from these games as well, just watching from the side. And I know you and I have both seen Donovan Mitchell come into the locker room post-game, watching different games, and even before getting into film and stuff like that, just being intrigued of how teams are playing and going on about their business. So watching the Magic and getting into the game against the Pacers will be interesting for them to see, and also just game plan, because there's so many different things that the Cavs could do and might change depending on who they have in the playoffs or what rotations they want to use going into that postseason.
Here's the other reason why Friday is so big. So Indiana has Cleveland and Atlanta left. And Atlanta, everybody knows, has been up and down throughout the course of the season. So hypothetically, if the Pacers were to win Friday, that would give them 47 wins, and then a win in the finale would give them 48, plus a tiebreaker over the Cavs. The only thing that the Cavs could do for the remainder of the season would be beat Charlotte and get to 48 wins. But again, Indiana would have the tiebreaker over them. And then you start talking about what that could potentially mean in other first-round matchups, what that could mean in seeding, what that could mean when it comes to the Cavs and the Philadelphia 76ers, potentially. And there are so many different scenarios that remain in play that for the Cavs, it's about how do we best control our own destiny, right? How do we best position ourselves to have the most success possible going into the playoffs, and then once we get into the playoffs? And I think it would be very beneficial for them to win these final two games and just potentially get to the three seed if they can find a way to the three seed, or stay in the 4-5. And I say that unless the 76ers find a way to get to the 6th seed. Because then if the 76ers get to the 6th seed and the Cavs are the 3 seed, hoo boy! That's not the greatest matchup for them either. So I just think it's going to be fascinating to see it play out. But a win against the Pacers means Cavs can kind of potentially game the system a little bit in the final game of the regular season. And they can kind of figure out, okay, this is where we stand. These are the tiebreakers. This would be the best thing for us. That stuff happens in the NBA. And it would be interesting to see how the Cavs would play that. Let's just put it that way.
100%. The only team that we haven't talked about yet that's still in the playoff mix, potentially getting into the 6th seed, is the Miami Heat.
Oh, they stink right now. Are they going to get there? Let's see. Hold on. Oh, they got Toronto. 2 in a row against Toronto. So win both of those. Let's do the math. Win both of those. 46. Yeah, they would need a lot of help from the teams in front of them, though.
I mean, Pacers lose both to the Cavs and the Hawks. And then the 76ers only win one game in their last one. They lose to the Magic and beat the Nets.
Like I said, they'd need some help.
Yeah. I think everybody needs help from other teams right now, depending on what you want to happen in these last couple of games. But yeah, they're at home in both of these contests against Toronto. And obviously, we know Toronto stinks. But more importantly, the Miami Heat killer at home.
They're also the team that there's a level of understanding that even though there's been inconsistency, even though everybody's been waiting for them to turn the corner and figure it out, and it just hasn't happened, even though they're basically playing 500 basketball down the stretch over this last week, there is an understanding that that's the kind of team, and we've talked about this before, that when the playoffs roll around, opponents don't want to see them. There's a level that they understand that they have to get to, that they're capable of getting to. That's the other thing. It's one thing to understand that level. It's another thing to know how to get to that level and be capable of getting to that level. And with Tyler Hero back, that gives them more of a scoring punch. With Jimmy Butler in the playoffs, we all know how dangerous he is. Bam Adebayo and the havoc that he can wreak. Obviously, Eric Spoelstra as a coach. So even though we're talking about Miami right now in a sense of an underachieving regular season team, boy, that would be a tough matchup for whoever gets the 2 seed or the 1 seed, or if Miami gets all of the help that they would need to climb up the standings. So would never count them out, despite the fact that I'm talking negatively about them right now, because they just continue to middle around and just not make up the ground that a lot of people thought they were going to make up in this last stretch.
Chris, I think we've talked a lot about this. These playoff series could be really, really fun or interesting, I should say, because of the matchups and just how jumbled up the Eastern Conference is right now, even in the Western Conference, because of how messy that conference is too, and just the powerhouses of the offenses that those guys have, and obviously you throw in the Timberwolves defense. It just looks like these series could all be really fun to watch. And I don't know. I think I'm still sticking with Boston and Denver making it all the way. But just these series could go either way for any team, in my opinion, in this playoffs.
Well, the other thing that I think makes it interesting and a little bit more fun, Ethan, is that it seems like Milwaukee might have dodged it when it comes to Giannis and his injury, even though he's shut down for the remainder of the regular season. His Achilles is intact. Calf strains are tricky. They linger. They reoccur sometimes. But avoiding the Achilles means that we're probably going to see Giannis in the playoffs for the Bucks. We're going to see the Bucks closer to full strength. OG Anunoby is back in the lineup for the Knicks, making them a more complete, more formidable opponent. In the Western Conference, Cat could be returning. Trae Young just came back for the Hawks. Who knows? They could upset somebody in the play-in tournament. When you have these teams closer to full strength and with the pieces that matter the most to them, Joel Embiid being back for the 76ers, they haven't lost with him in the lineup. That makes it more fun. And with the Cavs tonight, we saw a glimpse of the old Donovan. I wouldn't say that he's back, but he was moving better. He was a little bit more explosive. He made more of a commitment to try and get to the basket. He was able to change directions a little bit better. So he's starting to understand what kinds of things he can do, what kinds of things he can't do. He understands how his knee is going to respond to certain movements. He understands how to play through the pain of this particular injury. He's learning all those things as he goes, while at the same time resting and recovering, while at the same time building back his confidence, while at the same time getting back into a basketball rhythm ahead of the playoffs. So for the Cavs, the biggest thing that happened tonight was Donovan moved more like the Donovan before the All-Star break. Again, not back-to-back. There are still certain instances where you can tell that he's laboring a little bit, that he isn't himself. He's not 100%, let's put it that way. But Donovan getting closer and closer to 100% changes the equation for the Cavs. It changes the status quo, and it certainly gives them a better shot of making a deep playoff run. And because of the way that Donovan played, one of his best performances since the All-Star break, I don't think there's as much of a feeling of, well, it doesn't really matter for the Cavs what seed they get. It doesn't really matter for the Cavs what team they match up with, because Donovan's not right anyway. Donovan's more right, and there's a little bit more of a feeling that he could get back to that level. And when he gets back to that level, we have seen the Cavs be a more formidable opponent. We have seen the Cavs compete against some of the top teams in the Eastern Conference.
And this just in, the Suns had a horribly late game today, and they just finished beating the Clippers, and that means not only are they still in the seventh seed, but only half a game behind New Orleans for the sixth seed, but that means that the Lakers and Golden State are now locked into the play-in tournament. It's going to be a
bonanza. I saw a stat the other day too, Ethan, that no team from the 10th spot since the play-in tournament was introduced has gone on to make the playoffs.
That's nutty.
I mean, it's a tough road, right? You got to win two games in a short span. And then, you know, in the case of what the Warriors would have to go against, one could be against the Lakers. The other one could be against the Suns. That's not ideal in terms of trying to work your way into the playoffs. So yeah, I mean, that's really, really interesting that history is going against the Warriors right now. The Warriors could change that. They've got three games remaining. But right now, they're the 10 seed. And no 10 seed has ever gotten, if I read the stat correctly, no 10 seed has ever gotten into the playoffs since the play-in tournament.
So that could mean that LeBron might have to do that if they bump down to the 10 seed.
Look. If there's one thing we know about LeBron, he loves to rewrite history.
Woo-wee! And the other thing that I know that is certified in the Western Conference is that the Clippers and the Mavericks are going to play in the first round, and that's going to be fun. Kyrie and Luka versus the three-headed snake that is Paul George and Kawhi Leonard if he's able to go, and goodness, James Harden with Russell Westbrook on the bench. Yikes. Nasty work. And one team's going to have to play defense, so we'll see.
I mean, how many times are those two teams going to match up in the playoffs?
Too many, I guess.
I mean, this version of Luka, ooh boy. Clippers, Ty Lue, they're going to have their hands full. And there's no doubt about that.
All right, Chris, I think we've touched on just about everything. So with all that being said, that'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. Remember to become a Cavs insider and interact with Chris and me by subscribing to Subtext. Sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.